welcome to Fraggle Talk Classic, the unofficial Fraggle Rock podcast brought to you by ToughPigs.com. My name is Beth, and I am rewatching for the millionth time.
My name is Julia, and I'm rewatching for the first time in 10 years.
My name is Adam, and I acknowledge that time is a cycle, and I have watched this show infinite times in infinite realities. But in this particular cycle, I continue to be experiencing it to what is my untrained eyes the first time.
It's a very Can the Wizard thing. Sorry, that's my obscure reference right there.
Can the Wizard!
It's a reference to Hello from the Magic Tavern. Yeah.
Yes.
I keep meaning to get into that, and then I keep meaning to get back into NADPOD. Anyway.
I think this is
a record. We have not even gotten through the intro, and we're already on a tangent.
We've gone on tangents before gotten to the intro yet. Anyway, we're talking about... we're not talking about Boober Rock. Why did I keep the title from the old one?
It's
oh my god.
It's the same episode again. Welcome back, Cameron Garrity. Join us.
An unending cycle.
Hi, I'm Cameron Garrity. I can't do it, Cameron Garrity.
This time we are talking about episode 3 of season 2, The Trash Heap Doesn't Live Here Anymore.
Okay, but what if we just did 11 reviews of the same episode and just released them on the feed? And just, it was a slightly different review each time. Like, each one was clearly a new recording, but it was the same episode.
I mean, I don't know about you, but even I might get bored of talking about the same episode 11 times.
I know, but as a performance piece.
As a performance piece, it is very absurd and therefore fragglish.
Indeed. It is definitely something I could see Moki or Red doing. Anyways, you were saying...
So, this episode originally aired on January 16th, 1984, written by good old Jerry Jewell, and directed by George Bloomfield.
Yay. So, we are just, like, right off the bat with a really great little Sprocket moment. Sprocket's holding his bowl, and Doc says, well, what happened to all of your dog food? And Sprocket makes this beautiful, it's like a poof, bloop, 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 bloop. The idea that, like, oh, it just sort of poofed and then bubbled up into the sky. But the sound effects and the way that he moves his paws, it's just so good. And I love Sprocket so much.
Yep.
It's a legit dog move as well. I have experienced it so much where the dog eats the food and then acts as if it's starving, hasn't been fed in hours. And I'm like, dude, I saw you eat the food. You cannot trick me into thinking it vanished or I didn't feed you. It's a great moment to start off with.
Mm-hmm. I wonder what would happen if your response to begging was to be like, oh my god, you're so hungry here. And then you just give them one piece of kibble. Like, every time they beg, you're like, oh my god. And then you give them one piece of kibble.
There are some dogs that would then beg nonstop if they learned, oh, if I keep begging, she'll keep feeding me. Some of them. Maybe some of them eventually would give up the goat. But, like, some of us, I can think of many dogs that would be like, okay, I'm just going to keep doing this because it means I could get more and more food. Some dogs I know would eat until they died. No joke. They would gorge themselves.
That is fair.
Anyway, this whole episode with Doc and Sprocket is a science lesson.
Yep.
Basically.
And I love it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's great.
I wrote in all caps, yo, Doc, break us off a piece of that hot physics action, because this is my jam.
Right. So basically, he's taking us through the lesson of water in its different forms, you know, melting an ice cube into liquid water, and then...
I do believe that what you mean to say is that he is going through the phases of matter in the three most common states, solid, liquid, and gaseous, and the various transitions they can make between two, although he does leave two out.
Wait, I know plasma is one. What's the other?
No, the transitions.
Oh, the transitions.
He leaves two transitions.
Oh.
Yeah, he doesn't do gas to solid or solid to gas.
Yeah, how does that even work?
Very quickly and with a lot of energy.
I was going to say, it seems like it's got to be something powerful. Yeah.
I mean, dry ice is an immediate solid to gaseous reaction.
Oh, that's
reaction,
a good point.
As opposed to wet ice, which is just solid to liquid.
The point being that the lesson of this episode is nothing ever disappears. It just changes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love how in this episode we get, you know, hashtag Doc is neurodivergent in the way of, like, it's not shown as a deficit in any way.
Yeah.
He's not forgetting something. He's not paying attention to the wrong thing. He's excited about something, and he's trying to show his friend this thing that he's excited about, And yeah, Sprocket isn't quite, you know, fascinated for the vast majority of the time, but Doc clearly is. And Sprocket's humoring him a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it's just beautiful how Doc is just immediately so engrossed that he is happy to watch an ice cube melt.
I know. He's so into it.
Have you actually ever watched an ice cube melt? Because it's awesome.
Yeah.
Have you ever gotten to see one freeze? Because it's even cooler.
No.
Mm-mm.
Oh, watching ice crystals form across a thing of water is a beautiful thing.
Ooh, how do you do that? How?
You need to have a freezer container that has a window. Or a video recording camera.
That makes sense.
So we cut to Wembley, and Wembley is doing something that you don't really see very often, which is he's singing a song, but he's workshopping it.
Yeah.
He's in the process of writing the song. Where else have you seen that in any show where somebody's like actively trying to work on song lyrics and doesn't just sit down and play their song?
Very rarely, if ever.
I've seen it in Adventure Time.
I'll bet you have.
That's about it. I think Steven Universe. No, Steven Universe doesn't. Does it?
Not that I can recall.
I can't remember.
I'm due for a rewatch anyways.
We also get the return of Wembley's bongos, which we haven't seen since season one.
Oh, yeah. Those were so good.
Mm-hmm.
And this hat.
Also, his hat is so good. I love this hat.
Yep.
This hat features prominently in the song, too. And then Wembley wants to make the song about Boober. And it's great because Boober's like, that's a terrible hat. And Wembley's like, yeah, but I need it for the song. And Boober says, well, can't you just sing the song without wearing the hat? And Wembley goes, Boober, that would be dishonest. And Boober just kind of sighs and goes, I don't think I'll ever understand pop music. Oh my God, never change Boober.
It's very good. Yeah, he works Boober into his song. And then much like the hat being part of it, and so he can't take the hat off, he's like, Boober, you can't leave. You're in this song now, and you have to stay here to make this song be true. And Boober is so frustrated because he has plans for his day, apparently. But he gets stuck with Wembley and his song that Boober does not like. Boober does not like this song. He's very honest about it. Also, the Doozers don't like this song. Like, Wembley hits this note at one point, and the Doozers are all in the background going, oh, no, stop. And it's really great.
I'm telling you, we've seen them in the last one. We've seen them in this one. We're going to get some Doozer arcs this season. I'm calling it.
Yeah, 100%.
So one quick note is that we do not see Gobo or Red or Moki appear in this episode.
Yeah.
And we've had episodes before where one of the Fraggle Five was missing because, you know, either that puppeteer was playing another character that had a bigger role in that episode, or we don't know why. And this time it's three out of the five. It's just Boober and Wembley this whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And Gobo's the only one who has a reason why. Like, he's out exploring. No, we don't know where Red and Moki are. It doesn't come up.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're probably fine.
They're probably fine.
I mean, in watching this, with Marjorie being so prevalent, I was like, oh, that makes sense why Gobo's not around. And then right. I had a moment where I was like, wait, but where are Red and Moki? We didn't even, like, get a little bit of them in the caves, like, while the song was going on. So it definitely stood out a bit. But I kind of assume that maybe we'll see more of these kinds of episodes moving forward where it's really focused on just, like, two or three characters and the other ones are just MIA for whatever reason.
Right.
I can't remember if that'll be the case, but, you know, it makes sense because we've already seen them try out some new things in the season that this is something new that they're trying.
Yeah.
So we cut to the Gorgs and we get this great bit. Pogorg is napping and Magorg wakes him up and he responds, joy of my life and disturber of my naps. And it's like, aw. Yeah, satirize that whole I hate my spouse boomer style of humor. Satirize the heck out of it.
I mean, that's what Pogorg is there for a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Well, and they lean into it even more because Magorg has this book of lore, which we're back to Gorgish lore. Terrible mouthfeel, important story connotations. They're getting into the whole nostalgic for a time that never existed part of fascism, and they're leaning really hard into it. And I just really appreciate seeing that talked about in a way that is not glorifying it, although they are kind of cute because she starts talking old-timey and he joins in.
So there's a note about that. This was deliberately leaned into, they decided, between season one and season two. Quoting from the tome here.
The tome?
Thank you. I was like, sorry, you guys. Anyway, it was also decided that there needed to be a better differentiation between the voices of the Fraggles, the Doozers, and the Gorgs. Henson felt the best approach to achieving this would be in their language. Quote, For the Gorgs, Jim has proposed a return to that battered pseudo-Shakespearean syntax, which he calls Forsoothian.
Yeah.
Wrote Jerry
good,
Jewell.
Good, good, good. I was wondering watching this episode, you know, because she calls him good huz and they keep saying forsooth and things like this. And
yep.
I wasn't sure if it was just in this episode because they're talking about Gorgish lore, if they're just, yeah, reminiscing on these olden days, or because this is the first time we've seen the Gorgs in season two, if this is a pivot and this is how they're going to speak moving forward. So this is how they're going to speak moving forward. Is that correct?
Maybe not always to this degree, but mm-hmm. it's definitely going to happen more.
Okay, cool. All right. Yeah. That answers a question I had that I was going to ask.
But so they decide she really wants them to build a gazebo. And they're like, where are we going to put it? And Pa Gorg tells Junior to move the trash, which is the trash heap. And Philo and Gunch hear this, and they're like, oh my god, we're going to get moved. We got to do something. And Marjorie does some old school, old gods response to that. She does not approach this problem directly. She does not exert her powers. She just says she wants to put the right fraggle in the right place and let them be the hero.
Mm-hmm.
God, that is, glorious. Glorious stuff. No divine smites, just cat's paws.
They also... We are introduced to the fact that Junior Gorg sleepwalks, which I don't think we've ever seen before. And I don't know, maybe it's a recent thing. Has Junior sleepwalked in season one?
We've seen Junior have sleep issues in the past because we know that he had nightmares about fraggles crawling all over him.
Mm-hmm. We've seen him speak in his sleep, maybe. Is that correct? Or the fraggles have, like, talked to him while he's been sleeping? Or maybe thinking of this episode.
There was them having the collective nightmare about Junior.
Mm-hmm. But I remember that.
But that wasn't actually, like, him entering their dream. That was just their fears about him.
Yeah. You know, and obviously his sleepwalking in this leads into, you know, one of the final acts of this episode. And so there is a purpose for it. But, yeah, I couldn't remember if we'd seen him sleepwalk before.
But yeah, I was thinking that this mood of Marjorie's of, why not fraggles? Like, take the right fraggle, put him in the right place, he might rise to the mm-hmm. occasion. And I wrote, Gandalf recruiting hobbits.
Oh my god, yes!
Yes.
And then we cut to Wembley, hobbiting all over the place,
mm-hmm.
singing, today has been a perfect day in his wonderfully absurd little hat. This time with background music and background fraggles doing Ring Around the Rosie and Doozer Sticks as drumsticks. Like, it's a very Hobbit vibe around the Great Hall right now.
It's essentially from Fellowship of the Ring where Gandalf is, like, finding the lore on the ring and then cutting to the Hobbits singing in the Green Dragon Inn. That is the moment that is happening.
100%.
Because, yeah, Wembley, like, has everybody involved now and, you know, it's just a big, huge musical number. It's very fraggle-ish.
Yeah, I think I wrote when Philo and Gunge, you know, come to recruit them that, like, okay, we've got Boober as both Frodo and Sam. Both, like, pessimistic and hardworking. And then we've got Wembley as Merry and Pippin, who are just, you know, the fun-loving, can't help but be endearing no matter how annoying they are. And then later he's hanging on to Junior Gorg's hair like they're up in Treebeard. Just like, okay, we're going for it.
Mm-hmm.
They're fully hobbits right now.
That's great.
So I also just want to acknowledge, like, this is world-changing stakes here, and I love it when that happens. I love that occasional episode of, oh, yeah, you know, we did this little adventure, and we did this little adventure. Oh, everything could change. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, the point of this episode is that everything does change.
Exactly. Yeah, so Philo and Gunge come in after Wembley's song to be like, we need Fraggles. You gotta save the day. We choose you. And they just push Wembley and Boober outside.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm surprised that both Boober and Philo got as much screen time as they did because they're both Dave Goals.
Mm-hmm.
And even like appearing in the same scenes together. And so I was trying to figure out, it seems obvious to me that if you have to pick Dave Goals to do either Boober or Philo, you got to pick Boober.
But they got both, right?
They got both. So someone else must have been puppeteering Philo at the time.
Probably Karen or Kathy, I would guess, since neither of them are doing Moki or Red in this episode.
Excellent
it is
point.
Interesting that they chose for the premise of this episode, with Philo and Gunge and Marjorie being present, that they chose Boober over, say, Red. Like, you know, right. I think Red could have slotted easily into this episode, and it could have been a Red Wembley episode. That's interesting that they went that way. Yeah.
So we get to see there's the song that's the Gone song, and I'll be really honest. I wrote down one line about it in my notes. I don't remember it at all, but my notes say that the harmonies were amazing.
Right.
So.
Yeah, it's not tremendously memorable, but it's an important emotional beat nonetheless. Like, yeah, when big traumatic change happens, you gotta give yourself time to mourn and be like, oh man, a big change has happened. And that sucks. And yeah, it might be fine later on, but right now I need to feel change. Scary, hard, painful.
Yeah. Take space to feel your feelings. Always a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Beth, I've got a question for you. Mm-hmm. So this is the first time we've seen Marjorie in season two. She was in the last episode of season one where the Fraggles are in a period of not seeing her because of, you know, Gobo having his leg thumped. And she has this moment of saying they'll return to her at some point. Are we to presume that she has not seen them since this moment? Or have they already had a return? Because there's nothing brought up of like, oh, we haven't seen Marjorie in a couple of weeks or something.
Right.
Yeah, it feels like they probably have already resumed seeing her. But that was the last note that we left Marjorie on. And so I wasn't sure if there was something I was missing or...
Yeah. No, I don't think it's mentioned anywhere. Okay. We don't really know how much time has passed and when, you know, when they started coming back out to the garden. And maybe this is the first time since then.
You know, and it is a show ultimately meant for children. And so I'm sure they were not keeping that continuity, like, in mind in case, you know, a kid stumbled on this episode and they were like, what do you mean they haven't seen Marjorie in forever? You know,
right.
They want, for the most part, the episodes to be pretty seamless and that you can dip in and dip out pretty easily. But yeah, I had that thought just because we'd seen that episode so recently. I figured it was worth bringing up to see if there was anything tied more into it. But yeah, Marjorie is gone. She has been wheelbarrowed away.
Yeah.
And they're all very sad.
So yeah, we get to see the Gorg sit down to do a meal. And is this the first time we've seen them say grace?
Yes, it is. Let's talk about that.
So are we meant to believe that this is because Magorg got the book out and they're trying to do old timey times? Or is this just a thing that they do and this is the first time we're seeing it?
Unknown. Hold on, let me get the words here exactly.
I know it ends with, hey, nani, nani.
Yeah, and we will get that phrase from them in other important cultural things, like the solemn oath of the Gorgs is using that phrase again. This one is, let's see. Oh, so first I want to talk about this great little green screen moment where Wembley goes to hide behind a flower pot and Boober goes to hide in what turns out to be Magorg's sewing basket, and he yeets himself into it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So we get our first, but not last, puppet yeet of the episode. And then there's like a tiny little error in the CGI when he reaches up to close the lid of the basket. You can see a gap of background between Boober and the basket, but still pretty impressive for 1984.
Yeah. Very good. Very good.
Right. There it is. Okay. Sorry. So the grace they say is, all thanks to the spirit of the great Gorgs and the generosity of the garden. Hey, nani, nani, nani. Which, as far as meal blessings go, that's a pretty chill one.
Yeah.
I do think it is interesting that their first thanks is to a divine deity that is just them.
Right.
That'd be like if we sat down and were like, I want to give thanks to the amazing humans and also to the universe.
Creating God in your own image.
Very much so.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of religion sees God as just a old man in the sky.
Yup.
There's also a moment when, after they've sat down to eat, where Ma's like, I'm not eating lunch today. I'm trying to lose a little weight. I'm going to sew instead. And it's like, cool.
Blech.
Great.
It's like, come on, Magorg, you got to eat food.
Yeah.
Fasting like that is not the good way to lose weight and also not good for you.
Yeah.
No, skipping whole meals is not a good thing to do.
Body shaming is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Which, let's talk about the fact that they are eating what Pogorg calls a cold lettuce ragu. Which, it looks like a salad. It just looks like a salad. And I guess that makes sense if you're using the word ragu very loosely, because I looked it up. A ragu is a stew. It is a main dish stew. It comes from the French term to revive the taste, apparently.
Huh.
But, like, what the heck is a salad stew?
Maybe ragu has a different meaning in Gorg culture.
I mean, I've had cabbage stew.
Oh, fair. I'm thinking about this as the person who tries to recreate food from Fraggle Rock, and I'm like, oh god, do I want to even attempt this one?
No. At very least, do the garlic peach pie first.
Right. Higher priorities.
Very much so. So Junior mentions that he put the pile of trash out by the shed, and Pa Gorg is like, what? Why would you do that? Go dump it in the river, which, like, Gorgs, come on now.
Polluting the water source.
Yeah.
Don't do that. It's bad. But then we cut over to the tool shed and we get to talk to the new and improved Marjorie.
Oh, well, first we get our... Oh. So Ma Gorg eventually reaches into her sewing basket, which this is a great shot of, like, the interior of the sewing basket.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, with Boober inside.
Yeah. Ma Gorg's enormous hand and these slightly oversized spools of thread and sewing accoutrement and the miniature Boober puppet hiding in the shadows, which she eventually grabs and tosses away, and then we get our second puppet eat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I also, like, in reaction to her being like, oh no, a Fraggle, Junior grabs, like, a baguette and starts beating his dad on the head in response.
Yes. A moment of chaos. Beat your abusive father.
Oh yeah.
Hey, you know, gotta do what you gotta do. But yeah, they find Marjorie over by the shed. They tell Fallow and Gunge, and to quote them, she's turned into a fella.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's got a lot of interesting things. He seems very excited to be who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And to sort of be experiencing this newness of himself.
Mm-hmm.
And Philo and Gunge and Wembley and Boober are kind of, like, surprised at first, but then they just, you know, start folding in sir into their language. Like, it's mm-hmm. not, yeah. like, the issue is that Marjorie has changed. Not that her gender has changed.
I mean, that is how she has changed, is that her gender has changed.
Right, but
yeah.
She's going to change a lot more throughout the course of the episode.
Oh, that too. But also just, like, I don't know, it feels like they were given a little nod to trans folks. Like, yeah, you change and then you're still a person and that's fine.
Yeah, you're still the same person and your friends might stumble over what to call you, but...
They will adapt.
They will adapt.
If they care.
Right.
Yeah, I liked seeing how they, you know, they stumbled over pronouns, but it kept seeming like they were doing their best to kind of follow who Marjorie was in the moment of speaking to them, you know, whichever, you know, presentation Marjorie was presenting. And
I have also dubbed this shed the Dark Souls 2 gender swap coffin tool shed, because there's a coffin in Dark Souls 2 that if you lie down in it, it gender swaps your character.
Well, that's fantastic.
It's rad. No, it's awesome. It's guarded by two giant hippo monsters. It's a whole thing.
And the trashy gives them the advice to go sit quietly under the tree at the end of the garden and just go sit under the tree and think. And, like, that's rarely bad advice.
I mean, if the tree's on fire, it's a bad idea. Just saying.
But there's this quiet little moment where, you know, she says, she calls Wembley Fragolette, which I think is mm-hmm. the second time she's done that, actually.
Yeah, we've definitely heard mm-hmm. it before.
Yeah. And then as he's walking off screen, he's like, Fragolette.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, is there anything else before we get to the Traveling Mat card?
I think that's it.
That's what's next in my note.
Because, yeah, they go sit under the tree together, and Wembley thinks about Traveling Mat's latest postcard, and, or not necessarily latest, he starts thinking of a specific postcard from Traveling Mat and recounts it for us.
And we get to see Mat adorably misunderstand elevators. He's like, this is just a transforming box.
Yeah.
Which, again, is transforming someone's gender.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, cool, let me try it out.
Which, again, rad as heck. You'll love to see it.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, it changes the world, which is what happens when you change your gender.
That is,
like,
true.
If you transition, the world itself does change. That is what the Matrix is about, according to all of my cool trans friends.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I also just think it's funny that he just sort of, like, if you don't know that the tiny room moves, then yeah, you'd just sort of be confused.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he goes from suddenly finding himself in an office space to then the parking garage.
Yeah.
And almost gets hit by a car again.
Classic Matt. But this inspires Wembley to realize that the solution is that they need to move Marjorie.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to move her to the other side of Fraggle Rock. Is it the other side of the Fraggle Rock entrance? Is that where they're taking her to?
It's the other side of the rock. Because the Gorgs don't go over there.
It's like behind the big old rock that we now know that the Gorgs call Kissing Rock. And that's the reason why they didn't destroy it, because it's important to them. And next to that is the well. Mm-hmm. So Marjorie's new spot is kind of behind that rock and close to the well.
That's interesting, because every time in the past they've gone to see Marjorie, they have to cross the entire Gorg garden to get to her. And now mm-hmm. It's a lot more convenient because they just have to pop out and just kind of go around the corner and she'll be right there.
And that was a deliberate choice.
Oh, you just pulled the tome out.
Let's see here.
The tome.
We're also considering... this is a... changes in Fraggle Rock, like a memo in the summer of 83. It says, we're also considering moving Marjorie from her present position behind the Gorg's castle to a spot right near the entrance to the rock. In this way, the Fraggles can have passing encounters with her as they cross into the garden, relieving us of the device of always having to go and ask the trash heap for advice. In this way, she can sometimes offer advice when it isn't asked for, or the Fraggles and the trash heap can have conversations that do not precisely turn on the necessity of asking for or receiving advice at all.
Ooh.
Yeah. And, like, having in the first season the element of danger of going to see her because are the Gorgs out? Are they going to be spotted? Is, like, a really cool introduction to the world. But as they're building more and more on all of these characters, like, it can now be, like, one less thing they've got to worry about to, you know, focus on other things happening in the episode.
Yeah. They've established it. Now that they've established it, they can simplify.
Mm-hmm.
For the purposes of making things more organic. Love this show. So... Junior and Pa are taking a nap, and Wembley's like, oh, I know Junior sleepwalks. Let's just have Junior do it. And there's a scene that I have questions about because I don't know how they did it. Because we've got the Junior suit standing,
mm-hmm.
and Wembley's attached to it, and his mouth is moving?
Yeah, he's a tiny puppet.
So remember how there's a miniaturized... remote control version of all Fraggle puppets.
Okay, so that was I was like, did they cut a tiny hole in the Junior head?
No, because if they used the full-size Wembley puppet, he would be too big.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know. I thought they might have just had little fingers. Little fingies.
It's very similar to how the Doozers work, where they're also operated off-screen mechanically, you know, through robotics. But they're still being mm-hmm. puppeteered just differently. And that's how we've seen the small Fraggles occasionally.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Cool. Thank you. I was baffled.
It's great. It's a great use of the technology.
So they get to move Marjorie, and then Junior, like, almost runs over his father's head, which, boy howdy, that was a moment.
There's a lot of good physical comedy in this bit of Wembley trying to direct Junior with the wheelbarrow and then back after he's dropped off Marjorie mm-hmm. while Junior is asleep.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean left. I mean right. Right, 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 right. But then Junior goes to sleep and just lays down in the wheelbarrow. And I gotta say, wheelbarrow naps are amazing. I don't know if y'all have ever actually laid down in a wheelbarrow. It's so comfortable.
Can't say I've had the pleasure.
Well, now I'm gonna have to add that to the bucket list.
Make sure it's a clean one. But like
clean enough.
Just something about the curtain. It's just so comfy. It's so nice.
Oh, I love that.
There's also just like some kind of lovely metaphor in here about like, directing gargantuan forces without the gargantuan forces realizing that you are directing them.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't quite pin it down, and I still can't.
Well, it also reminded me of, I don't know if either of you have seen the really old Henson Frog Prince.
No.
Yes.
So it's the first time we meet Robin as a character before he's established as Kermit's nephew. He's just a frog with a high voice.
Mm-hmm.
And so he plays, you know, the Frog Prince. And at one point, he's in the dungeon with Sweetums. This is also the first time we meet Sweetums.
Hmm.
And Kermit is captured. And so Robert is whispering to the sleeping Sweetums, like, stay asleep, but let Frog go. And it reminded me a lot of this moment of the tiny creature, like, whispering into the ear of the sleeping giant to do his bidding.
And so Marjorie, who has also been going through just like wild accent shifts at this point, sort of resets back to normal, which honestly I'm excited about, but I was also kind of hoping that one of those changes would be permanent and that would just be a change to the character.
It's unclear, like her accent,
it's still changing at the end of the episode, isn't it?
Yeah, because it's been shifting back and forth between a more like New Jersey versus a more like Eastern European.
Mm-hmm.
Does an Irish accent at one point.
Oh yeah, she goes through everything. She's mm-hmm. she's got a French and a German and a Scandinavian that she pulls out, and the really terrifying one is the one that's like
deep and monstrous and scary.
Yeah.
I love that one. That one was great.
But yeah, it does.
But there's this. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say, it doesn't seem like, from at least what I remember from the episode, that the accent shifting is really resolved. Before we just go back to Doc and the episode ends, are we going to see this as a character trait with Marjorie moving forward? I guess we'll find out in future episodes.
Yeah, I don't remember what happens to her accent after this.
Maybe just like she settles in like the new space and just resets a little bit.
Yeah.
So, but this lesson of like, yeah, things don't go away, they change,
mm-hmm.
and that's okay, really reminds me of one of my favorite songs from Adventure Time.
Mm-hmm.
But the lyrics go, everything stays right where you left it. Everything stays, but it still changes.
Mm.
Ever so slightly, daily and nightly, in little ways, everything stays.
Ooh.
And Rebecca Sugar wrote that song. She had a rabbit when she was a kid, a little toy rabbit, a little stuffed rabbit, and she lost it in the garden. And she found it a while later and picked it up, and it was different. Like, it had been out in the sun enough that the color of this thing was different. And it was, you know, filthy. But this moment stuck with them so much that they wrote a song about it. And that idea of, yeah, things don't go away. People don't go away. They change and they grow. And that is the natural state of things, is to be growing and changing and shifting.
Yeah. And even, I think it's Wembley says, we don't care about how you sound. We care about what you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I don't know if I think that the people writing this episode and behind this episode were really thinking about trans rights in the 80s, but ultimately that was my big takeaway of like,
totally,
you know, you can still love a person and they're still initially inside the same person. They just change on the outside and change the way they sound,
mm-hmm.
and you can still love them for who they are.
Well, and even then, like, who they are changes, but it's a change of them getting to be who they wanted to be.
Right.
It's a change for the better.
Yeah, it's a change they deserve.
And even, you know, people who don't transition in that way, like, everyone's gonna change to some degree. Like, that's just the nature of being human. And that can be a difficult thing in long-term relationships of any kind, because you can get stuck in this mindset of, oh, I love this person that for who they've always been. You know, if they change, does that mean that our dynamic is going to change? That they're now a different person? Like, what happened to the person that I loved? And those are tough conversations to have. But it's gotta happen for healthy relationships to be like, yep, here's this change I'm going through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, would be great to get your support with that.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about the ways in which healthy relationships are built on allowing other people to grow and change in whatever ways they need to,
mm-hmm.
like acknowledging that that is an inevitability of human nature,
mm-hmm.
or trash heap nature.
Well, yeah. And then the beauty of it is you get to grow and change with them.
Exactly.
We cut back to Doc and Sprocket, where Doc has kind of wrapped up his science lesson talking about how things just constantly change. And then, I mean, we didn't really touch on the fact of why he brought up the ice, but it was because at the very start of the episode, it's stated that it's a warm day and he wants some iced tea. And then the end of the episode, after he's done the science lesson, he puts the ice in, takes a sip, and then he remembers that he doesn't like iced tea and storms off. But then Sprocket gets to drink the iced tea and he likes it. So he got some science knowledge and he got some tasty beverage.
Yeah, that was really cute.
Yeah. He puts it in his little dog bowl and starts lapping it up and gives like a to the camera before it fades out.
So Beth, you want to tell us about the international versions?
So the only notes in Muppet Wiki are that in the German version, after Doc changes the ice cube back into liquid water and takes it back to the fridge, an exasperated Sprocket blows into one of the distillery tubes. I guess that probably makes a cute puppetry effect.
I can imagine.
Oh, and I think, I don't know if it was for this episode or last episode, that I couldn't find, you know, like the full episode on YouTube, but I found the UK version of the Doc and Sprocket segment.
Ooh. Wow.
So those clips do exist out there. Not like all of them anywhere compiled. That would be great if they existed all in one place, but little snippets here and there can be found.
Rad.
And the only other note from Muppet Wiki is that the title of this episode is a play on the 1974 Warner Brothers film Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. Which I have never seen, but I'm sure movie buffs would be like, hey, mention the thing.
I think I've heard of it, maybe.
Yeah. Now, it's one of those that I think I've heard of a couple of times, probably because it made me think of this episode and went, oh, maybe that's where they got the title from. I should watch it and see if they're at all similar.
Let me know if it's good. Shall we talk about how to make the world a little fragglier?
Little guys are often the heroes for a reason.
You should take advantage of sleepwalkers, but only for the greater good.
Only for environmental support.
Only to save the life of a friend from not being thrown in the river.
Anytime you can give someone the opportunity to hit their abusive parent with a food weapon, you should take it. Alrighty.
All right. That is it for this episode. If you want to find me online, I am at Beth Anna Cook on social media and occasionally writing stuff for Tough Pigs.
And you can find me at Geek Girl Grown Up on social media, at juliagaskell.com if you like poetry, and then also occasionally writing for Tough Pigs.
And if you want to find me, why? Sounds like you need to, you know, continue down the path to enlightenment by eliminating want. And that want to find me should probably be number one on your list, because it doesn't make a lot of sense.
All right. That is it. Reminder to check out toughpigs.com. Give us a good review on your podcatcher of choice. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next time.
Don't forget to dance your cares away.
Down at Fraggle Talk.
Fraggle Talk Classic is brought to you by toughpigs.com. Fraggle Talk art by Dave Hultin Jr. The Fraggle Rock mark and logo, characters, and elements are trademarks of the Jim Henson Company. All rights reserved. The Fraggle Rock theme song, written by Philip Balsam and Dennis Lee, is used with permission. Special thanks to the Jim Henson Company and the entire Fraggle Rock family. For more from Tough Pigs, please find us at Tough Pigs on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, TeePublic, and Patreon. Fraggle Talk Classic is produced and edited by me, Beth Cook. Thank you to Joe Hennis, the Tough Pigs Muppet Fan Podcast executive producer. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time, down at Fraggle Talk.
Oh, I said cats can have a little Play-Doh as a treat.
Oh.
They can't. I don't know. Maybe. I wouldn't.
Probably not. I mean, it's mostly, like, it's advertised as being non-toxic.
Okay.
Yeah, but so were a couple of my exes, and let's be honest.